Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of The Sewers of Paris. We're going beyond the sewers this week with a very special guest, Aidan Dowling, the first trans man to appear on the cover of Men's Health. Join us on tonight's episode when Aidan says...
And I went to a great pride in New York City and I saw Dykes on Bikes. And I said, oh, that's me. That's who I am.
The topic is Maury Povich, All My Children, and Kissing Jessica Stein. You might know him as the physically fit model who appeared on the special cover of Men's Health a few years ago. Aidan Dowling's made a habit of breaking barriers, refusing to back down, standing up, and being seen. But he wasn't always the beaming, confident model on the cover of magazines. There were dark periods that at times he couldn't see any way to survive. In those times, he found the inspiration to go on in some unlikely places. A soap opera he wasn't supposed to see, movies he wasn't supposed to have, and a pride parade that changed his life. Thanks to everyone who supports The Sewers of Paris with a pledge of a dollar or more a month on Patreon. If you're enjoying the show, head over to sewersofparis.com and click Support the Show on Patreon to join the folks who make bonus episodes like this possible. Or if you can't pledge, you can still help out by leaving a review on your podcast platform of choice. You can also follow at Sewers of Paris on Twitter and Facebook. I post clips of stuff that we talked about and chat with listeners about the entertainment that changed your life. And join us for the next Sewers of Paris live stream on Saturday, April 28th at 2 p.m. Pacific. We've been doing these live streams twice monthly with special guests, and it is such a fun chance to hear about the movies and shows and books and music that you're obsessed with right now. There's a link to the next live stream pinned at the top of the Sewers of Paris Twitter stream. Now, here's Aidan. Well, this week I'm speaking to transgender activist and storyteller Aidan Dowling. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. I think it's going to be a good time.
So what is the entertainment that changed your life?
The main one, I think entertainment actually changed my life in a lot of ways, but the main one that I think about was actually a soap opera called All My Children. And I can't remember the year, but back when I was in late, you know, middle school, I stayed home from school one day, faking being sick. I will admit, I used to do that a lot to get out of school. And I was flipping through the channels like every, you know, 14, 15 year old does. And all the soap operas were on. And I actually literally caught the very first, like, on screen TV, daytime television lesbian kiss. And that really drastically changed pretty much everything in my life after that.
What do you remember about the circumstances of that kiss?
Yeah, so I just saw these two girls who, you know, no stereotypes of what, you know, we would say a lesbian looks like, right? Even though that's terrible. You know, just two girls on screen, kind of in a room, kind of like talking very quietly and being very... talking a lot through body language rather than words. And then all of a sudden, they just kissed. And I remember, for me, I don't know why, I was just so interested in watching these two girls interact on TV. And then I kind of felt the same way. Like, I was kind of like secretly lying about being sick. They were kind of secretly meeting in the episode. I was, you know, kind of watching it closely, kind of hidden, because I was nervous if maybe my mom would walk in or somebody would walk in. They were very hidden on camera, as well. And I just remember when I saw that, it just opened up this whole realm of possibility for me, honestly. It was kind of like, wow, like these two people can fall in love and it's okay. You know? And I think for me, it opened up this window of like, I could be that too. Like I could find a girl that I like and kiss her and like her too. And if it's on TV, then it must be okay, right? You know?
Yeah, sure. Was it something that just had never crossed your mind before?
You know, I think it was. Like, I think it was very much, I was at a point in my young adolescence where, you know, everyone's got boyfriends or liked boys, and here I am, a young girl, and identifying as a female at the time too. And, you know, everyone had their crushes. And I remember just picking people to crush on in school. It was always like my friend's crush. I'd be like, yeah, I like him too. Because I guess it was just easy, you know, oddly enough, like side note, oddly enough, the person that I would always pick to copy their crush, she actually turned out to be a lesbian later in life too. So that was kind of ironic.
Oh, great minds think alike.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so I think, again, like it was just it was just not really seen as something that I could actually do at the time. And I don't think it was ever exposed to me before, really. I knew what being gay was, and most of the time at that time, you know, so I graduated high school in 2005, so this was in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, to me, being gay was still just kind of a man and a man. It didn't really overly cross my mind about a woman and a woman, and I couldn't tell you why. I just could tell you that I don't have any, at the time, I didn't know any lesbians, or I didn't have any lesbian family members or anything like that. So for me, I think it was just pure exposure.
Yeah, and at the time, it was still pretty difficult to find queer characters of any kind, particularly lesbians. I mean, you'd have, like, occasional lesbian kiss episodes on shows. Like, it seems like that's kind of what you found.
Yeah, totally. That's exactly what I found on a random day in the daytime when I was supposed to be at school.
Did that, like, the next day when you went, or whenever you went to school next, were you like, everything's changed, like, the world is, like, rife with possibilities, or were you still processing it?
I was still processing it in the sense where I needed to engulf myself in it. So I started, like, recording back when you'd have to actually record on a tape. I'd start recording every episode and, like, time it so that it would start at 1 and end at 2 o'clock. And I became obsessed with All My Children, the soap opera, just because they had these two characters on it. And I even had a best friend who had the soap opera network channel. I don't even know if it's still around. But there was this channel that would just replay all the soap operas. And then on the weekends, they'd have, like, marathons of every single day in a row. And so I just kind of became obsessed with it. And I didn't, you know, I think I knew inside that it was because I was identifying with the characters, but outwardly, I didn't really know extremely why I was so entrenched in this soap opera, especially because, you know, I was kind of like a rebel punk rock kid. So watching a soap opera was not like the quote unquote cool thing to be doing. Yeah. So I think I just kind of engulfed myself in it. And I think that's when I actually started to realize, you know, over time, wow, I think I'm actually attracted to these characters and I'm attracted to their storyline, rather than kind of like this aha moment. But again, you know, we're talking before marriage equality, when in high school, a few years later, when I came out, I would be called dyke and fag and all these things in school. So it wasn't cool at all or by any means, to be LGBT at the time, you know, besides maybe at Gay Pride.
Were your friends like, why are you suddenly obsessed with the soap opera?
Yeah. So my one friend who I would go and watch at her house, cause like I would go over her house pretty much just to watch the show. And we were friends outside of that too, but I would always be like, let's go home and to your house and watch. And I don't think they caught on. I think they just didn't really get it.
And you mentioned that you're kind of more of a punk rock kind of kid. Mm-hmm. What was your aesthetic? Like, what were the other things that you liked at the time?
So I was like, I shopped at Hot Topic. That was pretty much the only place I was shopping. I had, like, in my ears, like, I had piercings, so, I couldn't get, I have a lip ring now, and, when I was 18, that was the first thing I did was get a piercing in my lip, and then about 6 months later, I got another piercing in my lip, so I had, like, what was considered, like, snake bites, but that was a little later, so at this exact time, I had 5 piercings in one ear, 4 piercings in the other ear. I wore, those huge baggy pants that were like black and then red with like lots of strings and dangly things, and reflectors. And then I would wear like a tight shirt. And that was kind of my look, was like really baggy, you know, pants with maybe like Doc Martens or like something with spikes on them. You know, the chokers on your neck with the spikes on them. I used to have like spiky hair as well. So just really, a very stereotypical punk rock, Hot Topic Spencer's wearing individual in the early 2000s.
So, you had like a few friends who were just like, oh, well, I guess, you're just really into All My Children for whatever reason. Did you ever talk about that lesbian kiss? Like when was it the right time to come out?
So I kind of kept it hidden, my little obsession for All My Children. You know, I had the one friend, her name was Jessica, and she was my best friend. So I told her that I watched it because I would go to her house. But everyone else, I kind of, you know, didn't have to know about my big obsession. And I think eventually I did come out to that best friend, Jessica, and I did actually say, you know, the reason I watch All My Children is because there's lesbians on it. And I want you to know that I think that I'm a lesbian. And at that time, she actually stopped talking to me for a couple of months because she just didn't really know what that meant. You know, she didn't know what being a lesbian meant. She thought that, you know, if we changed in the same room, I was looking at her or something like that. And it was like, no, like, you're my best friend. Like, it's not like that. It's just, you know, you're looking at boys and I'm looking at the girls, you know. So it was a nice kind of platform in a way. And, you know, I don't know if maybe she had thought about it. I never actually had that conversation with her, if maybe she had already thought about it or not, you know, based on the show. I think that her mom definitely knew I was a lesbian, being maybe,
how did you know?
Maybe just being older. We would have conversations and they would talk about their wedding day. And I would say that, like, and again, like, gender wasn't really a topic, right? So it was all about sexuality. So when we would talk about our wedding, I'd be like, I don't know, I think I might want to wear like a tux in my wedding. I feel like that would be really cool. And, you know, and her mom would watch the show with me. You know, and I'm sure her being a little more older and comprehensive of what's going on in the show, and seeing my obsession with it, I was tomboy, very stereotypical tomboy. And I used to play just a lot of male roles in, even in like our playtime when I was younger. I would always be the father or the brother or the uncle, you know?
Okay.
So, you know, I think back then when gender wasn't a conversation, I think it was, you know, if a female identified person was taking on a lot of male roles, it was just kind of, I think, assumed that they were probably a lesbian.
Yeah, so it sounds like an attentive adult might detect some signs.
Yes.
There. So you had sort of your coming out. Did you come out as a lesbian?
Yeah, so I came out as a lesbian when I was about out publicly. I think I discovered it when I was about 12-ish, 13. But it was always like I like one person. It was never that I was a lesbian or I was gay. It was just like, well, I like this one person or I like this one person, but not all these people. But I came out publicly when I was 16 to my mother. Right before I was going into high school, because I wanted to go into high school out. I didn't want to have to hide myself in high school. So yeah, I did come out as a lesbian first.
Why was that important?
It was important to come out because I felt like I just had to hide so many things. At that moment in time, I guess if I look back on it now, I think it was probably the first time that I really chose myself. And not even in a very big way, just in a small way of saying, like, you know what, I am a lesbian and I'm gonna be, I was always a kind of a rebel, and not a rebel who would like get in trouble or break something, but just a rebel in who I was. Meaning, you know, I was always, if people called me a tomboy, then yeah, I'm a tomboy. You know what I mean? If somebody, like, even when I was saying earlier, like when I got called a dyke and a fag in high school, like I would just be like, yeah, and, you know, I was just very, I think it was a protection for me. And so I think at that time, it was probably one of the first times I said, yeah, you know what? I think that I am a lesbian and I'm not going to hide it anymore. And I still had some shame about it and stuff. But I think luckily, even though it still wasn't cool to be LGBT, I think at that time you had Matthew Shepard, you know, you had MTV was really, really pivotal in those years. I think I was just exposed to a little bit more of confidence in the LGBT community. And I guess, you know, I wanted to take that on as well.
How was MTV influential?
TRL, baby. Total Request Live. Okay. I mean, that was my time. That was, you know, Total Request Live. I was in 7th or 8th grade, 9th grade, you know. But oddly enough, I was obsessed with NSYNC. But I never was attracted to NSYNC. I just wanted to be them, right? So, like, I wish I could sing and dance and swoon all these ladies. And yeah, so I mean, MTV was just that, that was the channel you watched when I was a kid. You know, there wasn't a million channels like there are now, not to totally date myself. There wasn't like just four, right? But you would watch, you know, 33 or 52 was Nickelodeon. And then when you transitioned from Nickelodeon, you'd start watching MTV. And that,
did you see queer content on TRL?
I don't think I recall really seeing queer content on TRL. That doesn't mean it wasn't there, but I don't recall seeing queer content on TRL. No.
Were you finding characters like those two lesbians on All My Children? Did you start to find like, oh, I noticed this character. I noticed this character, this story. Like, were things popping up?
Yes. Yes. There was a, I wish I could remember the name now, but there was a really popular, like TV show with parents. It was like kind of a family-based show, and there was a character on there who listened to a lot of Ella Fitzgerald and, you know, was really like artsy, and I really found myself attracted to her as a, as just a character. And then came out later in the show that she was a lesbian. And there was actually a show that I started watching where I actually got my chosen name Aiden from, called South of Nowhere, which was on Nickelodeon, but it was like the nighttime Nickelodeon for teenagers. Mm-hmm. And, there was a lesbian and then there was a bisexual character. And I started watching that show, and even the L Word. I mean, L Word was really pivotal in my life too. So I did start kind of picking out, and then, you know, you start figuring out, oh, you know, Kissing Jessica Stein was a movie that came out, had a lesbian movie theme in it. And I remember back then, that was when DVDs, like, you could burn the DVD, and you can, like, you know, if you had a brother who were, or sister who was like really good at coding, they could like break through the code, right? And like get you this DVD. And I remember asking a friend of mine to get me two different movies. And one of them was Kissing Jessica Stein, and another one was like some action packed, like 007 style. And all I really wanted was the Kissing Jessica Stein, but I covered it up. I covered it, you know, I was like, oh, my friend wants that one. I don't really know what it's about, but I want that other one, you know? Uh-huh.
It's so funny because, like, you know, there's so much social pressure for, you know, for someone who's perceived to be a woman to be like, oh, I like girly things.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are, like, feeling the pressure, like, oh, no, I like the James Bond things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
When you described coming out in high school as something that felt like it protected you, was that because you didn't have to carry around the secret and be worried, like, who's going to find out?
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. I think that was a big thing, you know, going back to just, you know, the L word that came out, I believe, if I recall, I was in 11th grade, 10th or 11th grade when that first came out. And I remember having one of those boxes in our basement TV that, you know, you could like quote unquote steal the cable or Showtime or HBO, you know, if you hooked it up right or whatever. And I remember I would, you know, every Sunday night at 10 o'clock, I would go down in the basement and I would watch, you know, 5 inches away from the screen, right next to that box, so that if my mom came down at any moment, I was going to rip it out and totally, and I was actually out at that time, but I was still just scared, to really, you know, it's one thing to say, it's another thing to be like active. And so I would just like rip the cable box out if she was to come down and, you know, freak out, cause I was nervous. I was scared of what people were going to think of me. But
what were you scared would happen?
I think I was scared that I wasn't going to be loved. I mean, I think that's what everyone's afraid of. Everyone's afraid at the end of the day. I think that's what most people are afraid of, is that if someone knows this thing about me, then they won't love me anymore. And I think that's what I was afraid for my friends and, you know, even just respected or seen as quote unquote normal, right? From my peers and from my family and my friends and everything like that.
What happened when you came out to your mother? Like, what was her response?
So when I came out to my mother, I wrote her a letter and I left it in, I actually went up to her office. She was working and I knocked on the door of her office and left the letter and ran away. And it took her hours to get back to me. And so eventually I just called her and I'm like, you know, did you get the letter? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, it's been like 4 hours and I've been sitting here like freaking out because you haven't gotten back to me. And she just said something along the lines of, like, you know, that she already knew, and she's was just kind of been waiting for me to tell her.
You know, I think this is something that I hear from a lot of queer people, that they're like, oh, these deep, dark secrets no one must know. And then when the coming out happens, it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
So you had, like, it sounds like a pretty, like, all things considered, like, a relatively smooth coming out in terms of, like, people being like, okay, sure, this is fine. And, like, having opportunities to explore characters and kind of, like, learn. You know, at that time, was your focus on, like, okay, did you identify as a lesbian and you're just trying to, like, figure out, like, what's my place in a lesbian community?
Yeah, for sure. I identified as a lesbian, and I noticed right away that I was kind of, you know, I had my own little section of lesbianism. You know, I was more masculine. At the time, you know, when I was about, I think when I first heard the term, I went to a gay pride in New York City because I grew up on Long Island, and I went to a gay pride in New York City and I saw Dykes on Bikes, and I said, oh, that's me. That's who I am. Like, I'm more of the butchy, you know, dykey kind of lesbian, you know? And so for me, it was really almost like a homecoming, because it was like, oh, wow. So there's other female identified people who express themselves in a way that I want to, and kind of was expressing myself, but didn't have something, a label to put to it. And not that labels are amazing, but I think in a lot of ways, labels help us personally just identify ourselves.
Yeah. So, like, what did that look like when you're like, okay, I'm going to be a dyke on a bike? Like, how did you kind of pursue that?
You know, I didn't do much. You know, I just kept doing my own thing. I think the one thing that I really started to feel more comfortable doing was cutting my hair shorter. That was definitely one of the first big things that I started to do, was kind of get like a pixie looking haircut. And once I got the pixie haircut, I really feel like that's when I was started to explore a little bit more. I started to just explore, oh, what would it look like if, you know, I mixed and matched, you know, traditional men's clothes and traditional female women's clothes. And, you know, what if I, you know, I would wear a lot of polos. Polos were really popular, with the popped collar, when I was younger. You know, that type of style.
So, yeah, so you're describing, like, the sort of the butch lesbian look of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have an experience like with that Kiss on the Soap opera, where, you know, you saw something and you're like, oh, lesbians? Did you have something that opened your eyes to, like, oh, transgender?
Yeah, when I realized that it wasn't just my sexual identity that was really the main thing, I realized it was more my gender identity, right? So when I found out about, like, transgender men, I didn't really have, with the lesbian thing, it was like, I was already dressing and you know, I don't want to say acting, but I was already dressing and appearing like these self-identified butch lesbians. And it was more like, oh, that's where I fit. Those are people that look like me. And so as that started to evolve, and I turned, you know, 18, 19 to my early 20s, by the time I hit 21, I was stealing all of my older brother's clothes. I was wearing boxers by then. I rarely shopped in the women's section. I would go to the outlets because they had extra small sizes of men's clothes in the outlet stores. So like, I remember Gap was like a huge, I would shop at Gap all day long because they had, you know, affordable clothes, extra small sizes, and they would fit me. So I started shopping there a lot. And then when I found what transgender men are and, you know, how they choose to dress and appear in the world, who identify in the masculine spectrum, it was one of those, like, oh my gosh, that's me. Like, I'm looking at a picture, I'm watching a video of someone who is me. They've just gone further with it as far as, like, maybe taking hormone replacement therapy or getting surgery or something like that.
How did you find those people?
I found those people very stereotypical. I Googled, like, a terrible way of Googling, but something along the ways of, like, woman turns into man, or, like, girl who wants to be a guy. And that was sparked in me from a ex-girlfriend of mine who actually asked me one day, because she had a best friend whose cousin had just started transitioning from female to male. And she just asked me one day, have you ever thought about being a man? And I kind of blew it off when she first told me, because I was like, again, I was a very self-proclaimed butch lesbian. I felt like I didn't need men. I felt like men were equal to women, but they weren't respected. So at that time, it was hard because it was like, I'm not a man. I'm a woman. But the question kept running in my head and running in my head. And so I remember distinctly like sitting down at my laptop and on my Dell or whatever it was, and, you know, typing in, you know, woman to man or woman to becomes a man. And a Maury show showed up from YouTube, actually. And it was this very male-looking man looking into the camera and saying that he was a man, and then pointing to a picture behind him of this very dressed up little girl. So like, you know, kind of, you know, within 1 or 2 years old, they have a big dress on, they look very feminine out, and he's pointing at this picture saying, that's me. And so that just blew my mind. It was like, okay, this is a lie, it's on the Maury show. You know, if you remember Maury, it's like a fancier version of Jerry Springer, you know?
A little fancier.
Yeah, a little, like just slightly fancier, right?
I was born a female named Maritza. I am now a man named Mark. I hated everything I saw. I even tried marrying a man, but it didn't work. I had my breasts removed and continued with my hormonal therapy.
When you first started taking male hormones, hair starts coming on your chest and you have breasts.
Genitals don't make a man.
And so it was kind of like, no way. And so then, you know, I went into the rabbit hole of Google and clicking and clicking and clicking and clicking. And then I found this kind of small little hub on YouTube of transgender men who were sharing their stories. And it wasn't many, maybe 10 max. And there was about maybe 3 or 4 trans men that I really identified with. And so I started watching their stories and commenting on their videos. And this was back when YouTube, there was no viral videos. You know, if your video got 100 views, you were like, whoa, 100 people just watched my video. You know, so it was actually a pretty safe place, YouTube, back then, you know, 10-ish, 11-ish years ago, because nobody was just randomly stumbling on a video that, you know, you might like video. You really had to go looking for what you wanted on YouTube. And so I was looking for transgender men and their experience, and very luckily I was able to find that. You know, there's unfortunately a lot of people back then, it really wasn't at all safe to be out, you know, 11 years ago, even within the community, right? So a lot of these men would transition. They would decide to take their hormones. They would get top surgery or bottom surgery or hysterectomies or whatever they desired. And then they would, I mean, you would pass them in the mall and you wouldn't know if they were transgender or not. So what they would do is they would delete all of their videos and kind of have one last video that said, okay, guys, so like, I'm done with my personal transition and I'm just going to go on living life as the male that I am. And it kind of erased all of these videos. And so that's what happened to pretty much all of them. I know two guys, again, it was a small community. So when you said hi, someone responded back, right? Like, as opposed to now, a lot of people aren't responding back to their videos. But back then, you know, you only got 2 or 3 comments. You only got 30 or 40, 50 views. So I know two of them. One of them is still very stealth, and the other one is very out, and we're actually friends. So, but a majority of those people would come out, share their story on YouTube, and then go stealth.
Yeah. Was there sort of a desire, I guess, to say like, okay, this is, I'm living a life authentically. I'm affirming who I am. And I just want to, you know, put the journey that it took to get here, I want to either forget it or kind of cover it up for, mm-hmm. so that I'm not always reminded.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think for a lot of transgender people, and I'm very out, so and I totally understand that not everyone is my story and not everyone is as comfortable sharing about their past as I am, but a lot of people just want to live a normal life, quote unquote normal, meaning they just want to they want to look in the mirror and see the person that they feel they are inside. They want to find a love. They want to partnership with that person. They want to maybe start a family or get some animals. They want to, you know, get a house or travel. And, you know, they just want to be, quote unquote, like everyone else and not be, oh, my transgender friend, John, you know, or my transgender friend, Jamal. Like, that's not what they want to be. They just want to be, this is my friend, Jamal. And so I think for a majority of transgender people, you know, being able to connect with other trans people was a big desire. So they would make the videos because it was like you wanted to not feel alone, but then eventually you wanted to maybe not so much identify with the trans community because you yourself feel like you're just a male. That's all you are. You don't really feel transgender. You just feel like you're born in the wrong body and you identify as male and now you're going to go live your male life.
So how did that go for you? Like, you know, you've been so public and open about the, you know, your basically your self-exploration, self-actualization.
Mm-hmm.
Why have you decided not to put that behind you?
So I think for me, one thing about my past is that, so I was a self-harmer and very suicidal and depressed from about 12 years old. I started self-harming at 12 years old. And I continued that up until about, you know, probably my 19 or 20 years old. And I had a lot of depression and I had friends, but, you know, it was, I kept to myself a lot. I wrote a lot of poetry and played a lot of guitar and just was very, as we would say, as a late 90s, early 20-some emo, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, when I found out that I was a lesbian or discovered my sexual identity, I felt an empowerment slight, a small empowerment in that, and just felt like, okay, I know who I am, right? And it saved my life a little bit because I think I was very confused and I just felt so different and you know, I'm different because I'm weird or I'm different because there's something wrong with me or I must be mentally ill because I have different feelings than the other girls around me and my classes and my peers. And when I found out I was a lesbian, I was like, oh my gosh, so much makes so much sense. Like so many more things make sense now, but not everything made sense still, but I felt a lot more comfortable, right? So it's like, you know, you get an upgrade, you know, in, you know, from, you know, the steer to middle class and, you know, you're like, oh, this is a lot better, but you still see first class, right? You're like, oh, if I could sit in those seats. And so I think that's kind of what happened when I found out that I was transgender. I think when I found out I was trans, it saved my life. It really did. I think that suicide before I found out I was lesbian was most likely going to be what my future was going to hold. It was just more like who, what, when, how. When I found out I was lesbian, it was like, okay, so maybe suicide isn't the answer, but this life is still not very cool and I'm not really digging it. So I'm going to find other outlets. So, you know, I started experimenting with like, you know, marijuana and mushrooms with my friends and stuff like that. And, you know, trying to just kind of be here, but not really be present on Earth. And, so that was, you know, I was alive, but not really living the most, embodiedness that I could live. I was really just escaping. And when I found out I was transgender, just as stereotypical as it sounds, it's just that puzzle, like the lesbian, like the puzzle was complete. Like the lesbian puzzle piece was like, it fit, but I just kind of jammed it in there and kind of cut off a few edges so it would fit. But the picture didn't look right. And then when I found out that I was transgender, it was like, oh, okay, I'm going to take that messed up puzzle piece out and I'm going to put this one in and this one actually fits and it completes the puzzle. And so for me, it was like, this saved my life. Like, I don't know if I would be here at, you know, 30 years old if I still identified as a lesbian and never found my true self-identity, which is a transgender man. And so, you know, for me to hide it, you know, I had this small period of time where I tried to go stealth, but it just was for me personally, it was just too messy. Like, I played softball. I was such a proud woman when I was identifying as female. And then when I was a lesbian, I was even more proud because, you know, and maybe some of it was a false pride, right? Like, more of a protective pride. Like, oh, I'm strong. I'm tough when I'm really not, but I'm going to try to allude to that so I feel protection. But when, you know, when I came out as trans, it was just like, this is so it. And to hide that, right? So like trying to hide, you know, pictures of myself or, you know, having to change stories of like, cause I was a big softball player, right? Like I played softball. I was on the all-star team, all that jazz, but like to have to transition that to baseball, just, you know what I mean? Or to, for a girl to be telling me a story about, you know, their menstrual cycle and me having to act like I have no idea what they're talking about. Meanwhile, I know exactly what they're talking about. You know, it just felt, I felt like I was finally living my authentic self as far as finding my male identity, but then I was inauthentically living in that male identity. So in order for both of those things to meet and for me to have reconciliation on both fronts, I needed to be open about being transgender. And so that was kind of it. It was, you know, I tried for a couple of months to go stealth and it was just hard for me personally. Some people, that's their desire and I don't ever think anyone should be pushed. But for me, I didn't want to lie about knowing what it's like to get my first period. I didn't want to lie about knowing what it's like to be raised as a woman in America in the 90s, you know? I didn't want to hide a big part of who I am today, you know? The reason I have connection to, you know, women and the strive for their equality is because I was raised as one. And I still see the repercussions, even living in a white male society, being a white male, I still have repercussions of being raised as a female. And so, you know, just kind of being able to give a voice to both sides of that spectrum, that coin through my own story, just it feels right to me. Like that feels true. I don't want to ever, you know, like I feel like that makes me who I am today. And for me personally, to eradicate and erase 20 years, 21 years of my life, just, you know, I only get so many years on earth and I'm gonna, you know, I spent a majority of them depressed and self-harming and suicidal. And I'm just at the point where like, I just don't have any shame in my game, you know? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean I don't do things that I regret or things I feel shame about, but it just means that I'm kind of more okay with being human than I ever have before. And so, again, being transgender saved my life. And if that means that I can be of exposure to someone else and maybe they can save their own lives, then, you know, why would I ever not want that?
So tell me about the opportunity that came up to be a more public figure. Like, had you been thinking of yourself as someone with a story to share and like, I need to find an audience? Or like, how did that, you know, I think a lot of people became aware of your work through the men's health contest and cover. How did that wind up happening?
So that was, you know, I started making my own YouTube videos when I found out I was transgender. So that was in February of 2009. And so from 2009 all the way until the men's health competition, which was in mid to early 2015. So those 5-ish, 6-ish years, I was sharing my story online just for other transgender men, for other trans people, queer people, interested, cis people, anybody. That's where I was sharing my story. And I started going to conferences and I started volunteering a lot. I volunteered to speak at Transgender Day of Remembrances. I volunteered to speak just to youth at the local, you know, I worked at an LGBT center in, on Long Island. And honest, I drove a van just because I wanted to be in this community and I wanted to empower and, you know, not only empower other, you know, youth, I wanted to empower myself and learn from their stories and other people's stories. And so for me, it was never about, you know, I mean, again, I mean, I made videos and like 20 people watched them. You know, I would make videos that I didn't think I was going to get on a cover of a magazine or be on the Ellen show, right? Because if I did, maybe there would be different videos. Because there's some pretty intense diary style videos on there. And so, you know, I never went in with that intention of sharing my story beyond just, okay, this is how I'm feeling. I'm going to set up a camera and I'm going to record myself on my webcam or whatever. And when the men's health opportunity came along, it was more like, you know, I had made myself public. And so it was 2015 now, things, you know, not Caitlyn Jenner, Laverne Cox had just gotten the cover of her mm-hmm. first magazine. You know, Janet Mock's book was just about to be released. And so, you know, the word was kind of getting out about trans people. And I think at that time specifically, I had a following. I had, you know, a lot of people who were watching my channel and on my Facebook page and everything like that. And so I got about just a couple of emails in my Facebook inbox that were like, hey, there's like this men's health competition of Ultimate Guy. And I was into fitness and I always had been. And I had started a trans male fitness collaboration channel on YouTube and all this. And so they were like, hey, like you should apply for this competition to get on the cover. Like how cool would it be if a trans guy got on the cover? And so at first I was like, oh, I'm not going to do that. Like, there's no way I'm going to measure up to these guys. And then I got another email saying you should do it. And then I was like, you know what? I'm here to show trans men that we are men and that we deserve to be in the same category as cisgender men. And so I was like, even if I don't get on this cover, I'm just going to apply because I want other trans men to see that, like, we need to start getting in the ring with biological men or we're never going to be seen as men, you know? And this was a friendly competition. It's not, you know, again, I had no idea that I was going to actually get on the cover. I mean, mm-hmm. I did it, like, I answered the questions on my break at work. I took, like, a bunch of selfies right then and there at work. Like, it wasn't something overly thought out. It was, again, me trying to live through my integrity of being an example and trying to empower the trans men around me. And, you know, literally one thing led to another and I started getting votes and more votes and this votes. And then, you know, the guy from Star Trek shouted me out or whatever. And like things just kind of, grew. And then when I noticed that, man, we have a chance to actually get a transgender guy on the cover of Men's Health, that's when I just started going at it and I started making videos about it and trying to get the word out there that this is something, you know, that needs to be done because we need to start showing a new kind of man, a man that, you know, doesn't look like every other man in the world. And to show that, you know, genitalia does not define what a man is, let alone what a good man is.
So describe for me, like I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase this question. Mm-hmm. So what was that like groundswell of support like to experience? Like you said, you just like took some selfies and sent them on. Mm-hmm. When did you notice like, oh, there's a lot of people who are into this all of a sudden?
Yeah, I think when I got like some shout outs from some big peeps, like when Laverne Cox shouted me out, you know, like when Sofia Vergara shouted me out, when like when some big names started shouting me out and then people that I didn't even know started like sharing or reaching out to me and being like, oh my gosh, dude, I didn't even know of you, but I just heard, you know, really, you know, we got to get this done. Like, I really hope it works. And, you know, and they had a leaderboard of votes from like numbers 1 to 22. And so like within like 4 or 5 days, all of a sudden I was like number 22 on this leaderboard. And even, there's another transgender activist male, named Buck Angel, and Buck Angel had applied too. And he had a much bigger following than me at the time, you know, like, and so he had applied and I saw he was on there. And then he reached out to me and said, hey, like, I think you're the one for this. Like, I think that you have the message, you have, you know, the quote unquote look, like I'm almost going to kind of back down and I'm going to let you, you know, I'm going to start promoting you because this needs to happen, not for me or for you, but for the community. And, since then he's actually been kind of like a mentor to me in a lot of ways. And that's kind of when I was like, okay, like this is no longer a me thing. This is no longer a I'm in this competition or I'm, you know, it never really was, But it was, that's when it was like, okay, this has nothing to do with Aidan Dowling and has everything to do with the validity and visibility of transgender men in the U.S.
Was it difficult to, or maybe this wasn't even something that you wanted to do, but was there an impulse to maintain a little bit of separation between, like, Aidan Dowling, the person, like, just personally who you are, and that face that you're putting out in front of people? Because it can be pretty exhausting to be to represent something to people. Like, did you ever feel like the need to be like, I just need some me time?
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely think that there's, when you put yourself in a spotlight of any kind, you start to put things through a filter, right? Because, like, you know that people are watching this or people are seeing this. But I think for me, luckily, because I had made so many YouTube videos that were so diary based, because I had a following that knew Aidan for Aidan, and that was really it. They saw my good stuff, my bad stuff. There was no one else I could be but myself. And that was it. So I really just continued to be myself and do the things that I felt were true to me. And, you know, of course, there is pressure because, you know, some people felt as though I wasn't what they felt was a good representation for the trans male community, or they felt like I was taking up space, or they just, you know, sometimes you just don't like people, right? So, you know, sometimes there were those people. But overall, I think luckily being so intimate in those early YouTube videos and putting my personal self out there so much, I don't have much of a choice than to be myself at this rate. I think that if I started, you know, even then and today, I think if I started to really, like, try to act or put on a show of some kind, I think people really are good at calling bullshit these days. And especially because of my following, you know, to not be authentic in myself and try to promote other people's authenticity, it just doesn't fall in line. So the good part there is that I'm kind of forced to be true to myself in a lot of ways, and that could be really tough sometimes. But I think, showing that for the community, for, you know, older people, for younger people, I think it's just a truth of the fact that, you know, the only reason I really think I got here is because I did stay true to myself and I didn't allow people to mold me. And when I felt pressure to mold, I would express that I felt pressure to mold. And I think that, you know, being vulnerable in that state is a real good positive thing, actually. Here I am on the cover of this, like, very masculine men's health magazine, but I was, like, being as vulnerable as I possibly could, on that cover and, you know, my leading up to that cover.
You'd mentioned that, you know, you had to watch TV with, like, inches from the screen so you could pull the thing out because you were afraid, like, of getting caught and your fear of not being loved. So when all this was going on, like, how did your family react to this, like, rise to fame?
Yeah, I think my family was kind of taken aback. Like, I think my family didn't really know what to do with it all. I think my mom was very, you know, she was nervous. My dad just had no awareness. I think he was just kind of like, oh, yeah. So my parents are separated, and I grew up with my mother. So my dad didn't really know what was going on. And my mom, I think, was more like, wanted to be protective, right? That very motherly protective instinct, and didn't want me to feel like I was getting a big head or anything like that, which I think is good, right? Mm-hmm. But I think once, you know, my mom came to one of my talks, and I think that's when she really learned what I do. Because I think it's hard to tell sometimes what I do, what Aidan Dowling does. But when she came to one of my talks, she drove out to a talk from Long Island to, I believe it was in Philadelphia or outside Philadelphia. And she saw me talk and she saw me interacting with adults and youth and all different types of people, cis people, trans people, lesbian people, gay people, bisexual, you know, queer people in general. I think that's when she really put it together that like, oh, like he's actually trying to connect to people. Like he's not just trying to like be a model or something like that, you know? And I think that's when she started to really, you know, kind of respect a little bit more of what I'm doing and start supporting a little bit more of what I'm doing and noticing that like she doesn't have to protect me. And now I think, I hope at least that both my, all my family members feel a pride in being able to say that they're a part of my family. And, you know, they ask me questions all the time and I try to educate them all the time. And so they're just kind of learning and growing as am I.
So it sounds like daytime television was very important for you, yeah. First in like finding, you know, a couple in love and then someone representing themselves authentically. And then you were on daytime television yourself. You're on Ellen, and, you know, kind of in that world that helped shape you and pulled you out of like the, it sounds like the very dark place that you were in. What was it? How did it feel to be out there in front of people and as visible as you were? Like, I think probably even more than anyone who was a role model for you up until that point.
Yeah, you know, as you talk about it, it kind of like hits me, you know, even more. Like even now, a few years later, I'm still like, oh yeah, that's right. Like I did that really crazy thing. And there was, you know, kids and parents watching and having their own epiphanies like I did way back when with the soap opera. And, you know, people still reach out to me and say, oh my gosh, I saw you in Ellen and that's how I learned about you. And the opportunity to be out there, like, I think it comes down to this. I think a lot of people are taught, and I was even taught this, like, don't show your weaknesses. Don't show them because the enemy uses that against you, right? But in my mind, it's like, if I show my weaknesses, then the enemy knows them, but I know them too, right? And that actually puts the control back into my hands. And so, you know, like I use a saying a lot, like power and vulnerability, like actually showing my vulnerability in that being on this, you know, show where millions of people watch in the middle of the day, you know, has repeats. You can watch all this stuff on YouTube. Putting myself out there was kind of like, yeah, like I'm transgender and I was born a female. And what's the worst thing you can really say to me? Like, you're going to call me a girl? Like, is that, you know what I mean? Cause it's not offensive to me. So, you know, it's like, being vulnerable and putting myself out there to me is actually being really protective of myself. Because it's like, this is, you know, I mean, it's like if you tell someone that you're really self-conscious, like I always, like I'm very self-conscious about my hips. So if I tell someone I'm self-conscious about my hips and then they go ahead and make fun of me for my hips, I'm kind of like, you know, you're kind of shooting me with the ammo I just gave you. So it just doesn't hurt as much, you know? And so being out there in that aspect was actually fairly easy. I mean, of course, meeting Ellen and being on TV is, has its own stresses and fears and stuff, but actually sharing the story is the easy part for me. But as far as people knowing that, you know, other people are going to be watching this and they're going to be having their own epiphanies, I mean, honestly, I just felt a lot of, I don't want to use the word luck, but I feel a lot of, you know, I don't want to use the word privilege either, but I feel really happy to be able to allow someone to use my story to find their own story. Like so many people email me and I'm so flattered. It just brings a smile to my face when people say like, oh my gosh, Aiden, I started watching your videos. I saw you on Ellen. I saw you on Men's Health or wherever they see me or hear me. And they say, you know, you changed my life. Like you saved my life. Like I didn't think I was going to be living any longer. And I always write those people back and I always thank them. And I'm like, you know, I really appreciate all your words, but I just want you to know, like, I didn't save you from anything. I didn't do anything. Like, you saved yourself. You just saw me trying my best to live as authentic as I can and try to be as happy as I can. And you just saw a possibility that maybe you could be that too. So I didn't really save you from anything. I just talked and babbled for however long, you know, or you saw me talking or you saw a picture. And, you know, that was just me being me. Like, what it did for you, though, was allow you to open up this small little gate in your own, you know, backyard, your own barriers, and realize that, like, hey, if he can do it, then I can do it. And I don't have any, like, I didn't open up a gate for them. I didn't, you know, take anything out of their hands to save their life. They saved their own life. And so if I could be a part of that by trying my best to be as authentic as I can be, because, you know, we're all human. We all have our egos and things that get in the way. But if I can continue to try to be that, and something like that can affect, you know, me being myself could affect someone and open up a whole gate for them and make them decide to live their life or to take that job or to take that leap in transition or whatever, then I mean, damn, I want to keep doing it over and over and over, because it's a circle. It helps them and it helps me. It motivates them and it motivates me. It makes them feel good and it makes me feel good. You know, and so in a really selfless, selfish way, both people really get to win. And I mean, I just want to live in a world where everybody's winning, you know, everyone's winning and everyone's feeling like their true self. And, you know, dye your hair, change your eye color, transition, don't transition, wear what you want. You know, we all have these bodies that we have to adjust and, you know, express ourselves in. But at the end of the day, like, you know, everyone just needs to feel good in themselves. And if I can do my best to do that, then I hope that it can inspire other people to do the same.
So, and speaking of like the effect that you can have on other people and other people benefiting from the message that you have, where can folks find you online?
Yeah, so you can find me pretty much anywhere and everywhere that you go under the name Aiden Dowling. So A-Y-D-I-A. Wow, I spelled my own name wrong. So under the name Aiden Dowling, A-Y-D-I-A-N, Dowling, D-O-W-L-I-N-G. You know, I just actually redid my whole website. So you can go to AidenDowling.com and it has my Instagram on it, my YouTube, my Twitter, my Snapchat, all that, all the socials on there. And you can mostly, a lot of my content is on YouTube. So you can look me up on YouTube, but I would say just go to AidenDowling.com and everything and anything, speaking engagements, all that stuff is going to be right there in that one spot on my website.
Fantastic. Well, Aiden, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. It was a pleasure.
Thanks again to Aiden for joining me. Those TV shows that he mentioned aren't always the best sources of representation. Maury and soap operas can sometimes be pretty exploitative. But even at their worst, those daytime TV shows can still be a source of power for folks who are searching for any sign that they're not alone. For my recommendation this week, check out two movies, both with the same title, Hairspray. First, the 1988 version with queer icons Divine and Ricky Lake, then the 2007 one with noted heterosexuals Zac Efron and John Travolta. Both films are not without their problems. The first can be a little slow in parts, and the second is not quite as daring as its predecessor, but together they make for a lovely experience centered on the life-changing power of a daytime TV show. The 1988 Hairspray was directed by John Waters, and though it's definitely startling and weird, it has much more of a moral center than his previous work. John's often commented on how shocked he was to have accidentally made a family film. In both movies, a young woman longs to see herself on television. She knows she's good enough to belong, but a cold, indifferent world isn't ready to accept people who look a little different from what they're used to. Ultimately, of course, she prevails, transforming the face of American television and proving it's intolerance that's truly unfit for broadcast. Thanks again for listening. Remember to join us on April 28th at 2 p.m. Pacific for a live stream chat about the books and movies and music and shows that you're obsessed with these days. There's a link to that at the top of the Sewers of Paris Twitter feed. Visit sewersofparis.com to watch clips of some of the stuff we talked about and to become a part of the Sewers family by supporting the show for as little as $1 a month. It's thanks to the support of patrons that I can make bonus episodes like this one. Let me know your thoughts on the show, sewerspodcast@gmail.com, and you can check out clips of the stuff we talked about by following Sewers of Paris on Twitter and Facebook. The theme song for the show is Parisian by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. And until next time, croissant.